When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The preseason is over. The Ravens roster begins to take shape, and we analyze the AFC North this week on Pod Like a Raven. All right, we are done with preseason football. We left it in the best, worst way possible, and we're ready to talk about actual rosters, actual games, some long-term stuff as well. I am Antonio Barbera, and I'm joined by my two co-hosts here, coming to you one day later with the hopes of having an updated final Ravens roster, but they don't care about our scheduling decisions. Jace Evans, we're scrambling here without having an actual final roster, even though the Ravens were mandated to do so by earlier today.
Yeah, about at the time of recording, at least half the teams at this point have officially released something. I think we just all had flashbacks to prior years when we suddenly remembered that the Ravens will hold off as long as possible. So it's quite possible we might not officially know, not to reveal too much about when we're recording this, but probably like 8 or 9 o'clock tonight. So we'll see. Hopefully, fingers crossed, they finally release it as we're recording here. But we know a few details, and I think just from watching this game, have a sense of the good and bad, regardless of kind of the actual names on the roster, sort of where the Ravens stand kind of entering the regular season. There's no more preseason games. So the next thing is opening night against the defending champs. So, yeah, it's an exciting time. I wish they didn't do this to us every year, but this is the team we cheer for. This is the coach of the team we cheer for is John Harbaugh. So this is just what's going to happen. So, yeah, kind of I don't want to say a lesson learned, because I think a year is going to go by and we're going to have the same thing happen next year, because it's one of those things that's not exactly top of mind. But, yeah, very Ravens that we don't have the full list yet, well over an hour past the due date at this point.
One of these days we'll get well-connected enough to be insiders ourselves. Tim Horsey, do you have any contacts, any people we can get a hold of here on the fly as we make final thoughts on what this roster will end up looking like?
Yeah, weirdly, most of the people that I would consider friends and reporters live across the pond and do not live in the United States of America. Don't really care about the throw ball, as a lot of them call it, mockingly, because we stole their name for the sport that they love so dearly. So no, I don't. I can imagine that, you know, depending on when this gets edited and everything, you might see some sort of little, or you might hear some little intro cut from me of like, well, this is coming after the episode, but you'll never guess that Lamar Jackson got cut from this team. You know, something obviously not to that severity. But no, this is not surprising coming from the Ravens. It's going to be a lot of shrouded in mystery to gain that extra edge that ultimately won't really matter. So yeah, we're back. Football season's back officially.
A lot of +44 area codes for Tim's calls over there in England. All right, let's talk quickly about this Packers game. Really, just kind of use it to pivot into some bigger issues that this team has as we get into the final days here before meaningful football. The score was Green Bay a lot, Baltimore very little. One of the ugliest Ravens preseason performances I have seen in quite some time. This is a team under John Harbaugh that pretty clearly cares about preseason games, as shown by their streak of wins, where oftentimes you could tell that winning the games mattered much less the performance of players and not making mistakes or having penalties, and they had all of that in the worst way against Green Bay over the weekend. So some of the good stuff that I liked, some of the bad stuff, and then I'll pivot to my co-hosts here. The good. Trenton Simpson. I don't know why he's playing in this game, but he impressed again. Made tackles, flew all over the field, had an interception. I'm officially, like, giddy now about him taking over for Patrick Queen and just being a starter, named immediately the starter, alongside Roquan Smith for the linebacker position. And now I know why it was so humdrum in the organization that, oh no, he's just going to take that spot and be fine. He has dominated the preseason, looks ready for week one. Bo Braid has made some plays in the secondary, some big hits, some of the, you know, flashy stuff that looks good in a preseason game. There have been some other smaller issues with him as well, but he is trying his best and has essentially had the best summer you can have for an undrafted player trying to make a roster. We would love to tell you at this point whether or not he made it, but we have not had that confirmed by the Ravens yet. And then Tylan Wallace, he's also doing the greatest he could possibly do to stick on this roster for one of those last wide receiver roles. Had the only touchdown for the Ravens, had a nice catch and run for a score. Really the one of the few positive plays that the Ravens had offensively. The bad, everything else, really gross stuff, turnovers, penalties, blown assignments, bad angles on defensive assignments and tackling. It was not good. I'm not going to panic about it too much. It's a preseason game. This is when the last preseason game, you have third and fourth stringers, not even second stringers. So I'm going to try to just erase it, but I'm wondering if some of this stuff is going to stick, is going to cling a little bit more as we get into September.
So we were texting about this. I know Tim shares my concerns, so I can bounce this off him. I am zagging, I don't know what you want to say. I think the national consensus is that people are concerned about the losses the Ravens have had on defense. You know, you mentioned Patrick Queen, obviously Geno Stone, not on the team anymore. Jadeveon Clowney, probably actually like the piece they're going to miss the most from last year's team. Just lost a lot of stuff. And obviously, probably more importantly, all the coaches that departed, which was their defensive coordinator and like top two assistants. I'm not worried about that side of the ball. Pretty much all the major guys, as I said, except Clowney, is back. We think Simpson can step in. And I agree. I think we all had the thought when he picked off that pass of, oh, great play. Wait, why is he playing in the third quarter? Didn't need to see him out there. But he looks like he should be able to step in and play. He'll have young people young player struggles. The group I'm more worried about, actually, in 2024 is the offense. And I think, you know, we've harped on it all preseason. This offensive line, I just don't know if it's going to be it this year. You know, they struggled to run the ball yet again in this game. And obviously, no Derrick Henry, no Lamar Jackson. That's going to matter. Chris Collier, their leading rusher in this game, they've already cut. As of this recording, Owen Wright, another player, hurt, so we're not going to see him in any meaningful role, really, if, assuming he sticks around. But they couldn't run the ball, and they still played several like potential starters for a large chunk of the, at least the first half. You know, Rosengarten's out there, Voorhees is out there. I just have Philele's out there. He had a false start again. Voorhees had another play where it looked like he just got absolutely run over. I just have some concerns about how bad they ran the ball all preseason and just the line in general. And I think if anything sinks the Ravens this year, it's going to be just the state of this offensive line and the offense in general. And like, you know, I don't know, the weapons, like, they didn't really lose. They lose OBJ. That doesn't matter too much. But like now, I'm like, is Zay Flowers an actual one? I'm having all these. I'm having a crisis, I think, in my belief in the offense as we get closer to the season. And I didn't see anything in this Packers game that made me feel better about the offensive line. Really, they ran the ball marginally better, but it was still 29 attempts, 98 yards, 3.4 a carry, long of 15. Not great. And obviously, yes, no starters were involved in the running back and quarterback situation. But like we said, we've talked about, several guys who are starting week one or they're planning to start week one played in this game and they still couldn't run the ball. So, yes, it'll change if Stanley's in there. It'll change if Linderbaum's in there. But it still, I think, raised my concerns. And my guard is just up for a potential just problem area that doesn't go away all season.
And you kind of mentioned it too. You know, the first work, or you mentioned this in the text, I should say. First two games of the year, we're kind of going to know about this offensive line. Tyler Linderbaum still isn't fully healthy. I don't expect him to be healthy in what, you know, just over a week now. It doesn't seem like it. Chris Jones is your first defensive tackle. And then the combination of Max Crosby and Christian Wilkins, who just got paid $100 million by the Las Vegas Raiders in a sort of sensible move. Good player. You know, if they had a quarterback, it would be much better. Those are the first two defensive lines that you're going to have to face. Don't forget to mention Steve Spagnuolo, the defensive coordinator, probably the best or one of the best defensive coordinators in the league for the Kansas City Chiefs. I just think, simply put, for me, the concerns that the people have on defense are you're saying that Madubuike is going to have a significant step down after being paid. I don't believe that's true. I don't know if he's going to have the 13 sack year that he did. You're thinking that Roquan Smith is going to lose a step because the guy next to him isn't the same? Just simply false. And you think there's some sort of issue with the secondary. The secondary is the strongest part of this team, and it's not even close. When healthy, you look at the names in that secondary, Marlon Humphrey, Kyle Hamilton, Marcus Williams, Brandon Stevens, on a contract here, by the way, Nate Wiggins, who has been fantastic in preseason. That is the strongest. Now, again, injuries always hit the defensive secondary. But, like, for me, I totally get it with Mike McDonald. And I totally get it with not only Mike McDonald, but the brain drain of all of these defensive coaches leaving. Totally understand that. And then some poor performances in the preseason. Everyone wants to light their hair on fire. I get it. I think the offensive line is going to be the thing that we constantly come back to this season of, oh my God, Lamar didn't have any time. Oh my God, he was running for his life all game. Oh my God, they couldn't get anything established on the ground because the offensive line couldn't block anybody. Like, we've done this, like, as recently as a couple of years ago, it feels like, where games were being stunted because the offensive line couldn't get the job done. That will kill an offense more than having a receiver. I mean, the Ravens have never had a stud Justin Jefferson wide receiver. They never have, and they've had good offenses before. You know, they don't always have the premier, you know, Jamal Lewis, Ray Rice in his prime running back, and the running game could be okay if the offensive line is good. We don't even need to get into the quarterback situation, not named Joe Flacco and Lamar Jackson. All of that falls apart if the offensive line doesn't work. And I think, you know, I totally hear the point on the weapons, Jace. Zay Flowers is not a number one. By the time his career is over, he's going to be seen as a really fun gadget number two, I think, at his peak. He's never going to be a number one wide receiver. And partly that's just his size. Like, it is what it is. But for me, that's the line is just the major concern here. You know, Harbaugh's already said they've got a starting group. They know what they're going with. They're not going to tell anybody, of course. I mean, again, they haven't announced, as we record this, well after the 4 p.m. deadline, there still has not been a peep out of the Ravens about who they've actually cut. So don't expect to hear that until they're literally doing, like, the mantra on Sunday Night Football. And it's like, I would say Tyler Linderbaum, but he's definitely going to be hurt. Like, Ronnie Stanley, Notre Dame, you know, Patrick McCurry, wherever the hell he went. Like, that's when you're going to know who the offensive line is. So I just think I'm very wary about becoming a broken record on this podcast because games are being lost because the offensive line can't do their job.
I'm hoping that we just, the actual line that we see is completely different from what we've seen. That, oh no, of course McCurry was going to start, or like, of course Ben Cleveland is the right guard who we haven't really seen with the starters yet, and then all of a sudden things look a little more cohesive, things look a little smoother. But yeah, the biggest issue is maybe that we've already gone in the wrong direction from a month ago to today, where the Linderbaum injury is terrifying. Came back to practice Monday, was wearing the red. I don't even know if I've seen this, an offensive lineman with the no contact jersey. Like, I don't really know how that's possible. That's what he was wearing, so that's a concern. We're going to be coming back next week when they start posting the daily injury lists, and he's just going to be a limited for 3 days straight, and then we'll have no idea what's actually happening. I have a hunch we'll also be seeing a lot of two tight end sets in the first couple of weeks, or extra linemen doing some heavy sets, heavy formations while this thing gets figured out. But yeah, some concerns there certainly. would have been a little bit better, even if we knew that Stanley and Linderbaum were 100% healthy going into it, and we had to plug a few of the holes. At this point, it's five question marks along the entire line, and we'll see how many of those are resolved two Thursdays from now. Another injury that is odd and strange and more concerning is the one with Mark Andrews. Was in a car accident last week. They literally wrote that there were no injuries, that he had no injuries in the car accident, has not practiced since, and we have no idea, basically, what's going on with him outside of some weird, veiled comments from Harbaugh saying that he thinks that they'll be ready, or he'll be ready for week one. That's another guy I'm convinced is going to have a limited designation, three practices in a row, and then we'll see on Thursday afternoon whether or not he's playing. I'm concerned with Andrews, I'm concerned with Linderbaum, concerned with some other guys in a second, but thoughts on what is going on with Mark Andrews?
I don't have a ton of thoughts on old Mark Andrews. I just think it's another injury bug that we're super concerned about, right? For me, obviously an incredible player, obviously the number one weapon, I think, on this offense, but Isaiah Likely is very good, so I'm ready for Likely season if that is what it comes down to.
I don't love it because I still think in many ways Andrews is certainly Lamar's security blanket, and I thought they played fine. Obviously, they closed really strong down the stretch last season without Andrews. He gets hurt in, what, October, right? Like midseason, maybe early November. So he missed the kind of their push down the stretch when they really shined. But I still think they need him or some semblance of him. But I do think, that being said, the Linderbaum thing concerns me even more so, just for the reasons we talked about with the line of you banking on him being one of the two rocks. And like you said, Antonio, I think it's like it's a neck injury for a center. And he's out here a week and a half from the season opener, not even a week and a half at this point, wearing a red non-contact jersey. And it's like, you're going to take contact to your neck when your head is bent over the ball and you are a center. And that's just how it is. And you're in a three-point stance on every play. And it's scary. And I hope he's okay because they need him. You know, they survived one or two games last season without him, but that was with significantly less questions around him last year. You know, you had Kevin Zeitler there. You had a steady season from a veteran like John Simpson. They don't have that this year, seemingly don't have it. Obviously, we had questions about guys like Simpson entering last season. It's a lot more questions this year. So I am concerned about the Andrews one. I think it's weirder, at least, like, we have a vague sense of what the Linderbaum injury is, which, you know, even if it's maybe more serious, being a neck injury, we know he has a neck injury. Like, we have no insight into basically anything that's going on with Mark Andrews. It's like, is it his ankle still? Maybe. No one said really either way. So, yeah, with being in the dark on that, that's a frustration, but I agree with your assessment that one of these guys will not play in week one, and it'll be a problem against the Chiefs.
One other thing I wanted to go over before we get into this kind of ties into the roster. The rookie draft class it's been one of the oddest collection of injuries, lack of playing time, lack of practice reps, really from rounds 3 through 7, almost every single player. And I am trying to remember other years, other summers into week one when we had so little information about all these guys and where they're going to fit. All the, you know, prognosticators have said, you know, how many of these players are they going to stash because they're not ready to play because they've been hurt for periods of time. Adisa Isaac, Sanusi Kane, Rasheen Ali, Devontae Walker, TJ Tampa, they've all missed like weeks seemingly here or there with injuries. All of them have missed parts of the preseason games, if not more than that. Even the center who, Jace, I still haven't gotten the pronunciation, Samak, we'll figure it out at some point. He got banged up in the in the Packers game, so wasn't even able to get a ton of reps. Obviously, it's early, way too early, to make any sort of calls about the draft class, but we know that our first-round pick has played and looked good. Our second-round pick has played the most. And then 3 through 7, besides Devin Leary, we have no idea where if they're going to have any sort of impact, any sort of snap count for this team in the first month of the season, or even beyond that. It's kind of a baffling roster issue that they may face sooner rather than later. You need these guys to play.
Yeah. Well, and that's the problem. It's when you have, we've talked about this, but when you have a quarterback like Lamar Jackson, again, won the MVP on this $50 million a year contract, so worth every penny, but you're going to have to find and replace guys. And we saw the exodus, and it certainly seems like just the replacements are not exactly flying in from this rookie class. I mean, even Nate Wiggins, you mentioned, he's been hurt. He missed a week. He was back out there on Sunday, or on Saturday, rather, and that scared me, just seeing him on the field. I saw him, like, make a play, and I'm like, oh, nice. And then you're like, wait, why is he playing? Like, we need this guy. And, yeah, it's... like you said, it's like him and Rosengarten, and I feel like, and you can't even say you can bank on rookies, but they're literally the only ones where I'm like, they will play. I have no sense that any of these guys are even getting like any time. And that's not great for a team that has to rely on the draft to kind of supplement the roster after the turnover you experience. So yeah, I mean, some of these guys will certainly develop and turn into things, but as far as an offseason, I would say it is not what you want, really, when you are a team that is win now like the Ravens, who hopes to hit on a few drafts. Because, you know, we've seen in the past, drafts can a single draft can completely change the trajectory of your franchise. And this one kind of, obviously early, but sort of seems like a nothing burger, at least at the moment, sort of entering the season. So we'll see. Maybe Wiggins is a multi-time All-Pro, and who cares about the 2nd through 7th round picks at all? No one will remember in the years to come. But yeah, for now, it's, I think, looking like an underwhelming thing, sort of group. And it's really just all injuries to blame. It's not like these guys have underperformed or anything like that. It's just like they've been hurt. And so that's kind of an unfortunate reality of football. But yeah, I think certainly for this season, it doesn't bode great. I feel like I'm doing my yearly Ravens doom and gloom as the set. I'm excited all summer, and then the second the season gets on the brink, I'm prepared for disaster to strike at every moment. But yeah, I don't know. I'm just, it's hard to kind of, you rattled through those names and just everyone missing time. It's just like, can I expect anything from this? Especially from a coach who's like hesitant to play rookies anyway when they get a full camp. So yeah, I doubt we see a ton of these guys make an impact, and if they do, it's probably like week 15 and 8,000 other guys have been hurt and the season's kind of spiraling down the drain one way or the other anyway. So yeah, I don't know, I'm not super optimistic about the rookie class, I guess, is to sort of just put a bow on it.
Jace already spiraling down the drain. Not even 25 minutes into to the episode. It'll be all right, Jace. It'll be okay. But yeah, and then the player in those rounds that we have seen play the most at this point, in Devin Leary, not so reassuring about that QB3 spot.
Tough game.
All right, let's look at the roster now. Obviously, we're doing this a bit on the fly. Some names we know about, some of the more obvious ones, some names that we haven't heard about but are likely to be cut, we'll go over here in a second. But I'll run through some names, and then I'll get your guys' opinions on any not mistakes, but guys that we might have liked to see stick, or some questions that we might still have about certain players. Starting at quarterback, Emory Jones. So I guess Devin Leary didn't play poorly enough to not end up as the third quarterback, because Emory Jones was released. Chris Collier was released. Anthony Miller, Russell Gage, and Sean Ryan in the wide receiver group might have something to talk about there with those two, those first two names, August additions to the team. And not able to stick. Tight end Riley Sharp, Mike Riggerman, and Kadir Ismail, all cut. That one a little bit more obvious in terms of the tight end room. For the offensive line, so far we know about Daryl Simpson and Tashaun Manning at this point. Evandy Rigby, the linebacker, who I put on my James Prochet, one of my James Prochet nominees. He was not able to make the team, shockingly. And then I'll stop. There's a few more names. Along the defensive line, CJ Ravenel, I believe, and then Tramell Walther. But in the secondary, the biggest name, and it's Damarian Williams, cut from this team. Let's start there, because that's probably the biggest name, or certainly the biggest name, a guy who played games and meaningful games with the Ravens in the past. Curious that he is not able to stick in the DB room.
He was the name that jumped out the most to me, certainly. But I feel like in some ways, maybe I saw it coming. It just seems like Jalen Armour Davis has always kind of had a leg up on him, even from day one. Like, I think back to, you know, when they were getting torched by the Dolphins, that crazy comeback a few years ago. It was because a rookie Jalen Armour Davis was getting just burned by the likes of Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. They've just always seemed to like Armour Davis. I believe he was drafted slightly earlier than Pepe Williams. But Armour Davis has had a better camp, and obviously they go out and they make some moves. They, you know, we talked about them a few weeks ago. They added a guy like Eddie Jackson to the safety group, and it just kind of seemed like it started to just sort of roster crunch. And as Tim kind of said earlier in the show, you know, this is their deepest position, at least on paper. It was one they went out and they addressed in the offseason. It looked like an issue on paper, and they went out and they addressed it. Thoroughly, I would say, with two draft picks, bringing in Eddie Jackson, all the guys they are returning. And yeah, I think it just kind of led to a crunch. Certainly, I don't think one game swung it. He wasn't great against the Packers. There was one play he just got absolutely planted on a block that he was complaining was an illegal block. Did not seem to sway the referee at all. He got burned. You know, nice throw, but a touchdown caught over him. Rod Woodson seemed to not love how he lined up or played it or something about sort of his technique on the play. I thought it was a nice catch, but Rod didn't seem to love it. So yeah, he probably had a little bit of insight, certainly more than I have. But yeah, so I think it's just kind of that. He just never really stood out. And when you kind of have just this depth that they have at this position, the only reason I was surprised, I guess, was just their defensive backs get hurt all the time. And we just talked about TJ Tampa is hurt, and we saw Nate Wiggins get hurt. So just the fact that they're always going through defensive backs kind of surprised me a little bit. And obviously they can always bring them back on like the practice squad or whatever. But that was the only thing that kind of surprised me, because I think quality of play, he just hasn't been healthy enough, hasn't shown enough on the field, and like they have other guys for return game. I know that was like kind of they throw them out for punt returns in preseason and sometimes in games, but they have other guys to do that too. So I think, yeah, it just kind of came a numbers game, and that they feel like they have enough quality back there that he kind of, you know, got the short end of the stick. And I hope we see it before the end of our show, but I'm guessing this means they also probably are taking a lot of offensive linemen and just keeping their options open on that. And they just feel better comparatively about where the secondary group is.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of nailed it. I think the initial reaction for people is, oh, no, this is the unit that always gets hurt. So they decide to try and keep as many bodies as possible. But one, that point that Jace just made there, it tells you that they want more bodies in other positions, right? It's kind of, if you're reading the tea leaves here, and as you're listening to this, you know, so maybe we're just completely wrong, but that's kind of just the best guess at this point. And then, yeah, like I mentioned it before, I mean, Jace went through the list there. I completely forgot about Eddie Jackson, just because we haven't really seen him in the preseason, as I was making the first point. So it just simply comes down to a numbers game. Pepe Williams also not the healthiest guy, has been injured a couple times before. And, you know, I think if we get out of this and that's the biggest name off of this list, I think I'm kind of pretty happy with where things stand.
The wide receiver room, guys, they sign Anthony Miller and Russell Gage, I feel like days apart, in August, we get the feeling, oh no, they are trying to add veteran talent to this group. Neither of them ends up making it. Zay Flowers, Rashad Bateman, Nelson Agholor, Deontay Hardy. Those are the, I would say, the guaranteed yeses. Tylan Wallace seems to have played his way onto this roster. And then we'll see what happens with Devontae Walker. If he's on the roster, if he's on an injured list, is that it, do you think? Do they make moves to add a veteran elsewhere? Certainly this is one of the Ravens' favorite things to do, is to look around and see what players have been released on other teams. How do you think? Do you feel better about who they do have when they have the confidence to cut these guys that they signed so late? What is your feelings about this after seeing these two veterans not stick on the roster?
I think this is simply those guys were camp bodies. Like, when we look back at it, I think we just kind of realize, oh wait, they just needed guys to throw to for a couple of weeks, and maybe if they broke out, they broke out. I think Devontae Walker makes it. Fourth round rookie. It is rare that the Ravens let go of draft picks, especially picks that they value like that. So I think he's a lock. And Tylan Wallace, come on down, buddy. The James Prochet Award for keeping your spot for preseason performances. I mean, showed up and showed out in two games that the Ravens sucked in. And so that was cool for him, I guess. You know, I think that was one of those things where they like him a lot in that building. You can, I imagine. They like him a lot in that building, and for what he does on special teams and what have you. And he must have some sort of locker room vibe too, as well, that, you know, Harbaugh and the receivers coaches and the special team coaches saw him make two plays and they were like, Tylan's won the job. He's got it. He's got a spot. So I think that's kind of, you know, where you're at. And that, you know, that obviously sealed the deal for the likes of a Russell Gage and Anthony Miller.
Yeah, Wallace seemed like the only guy that kind of noticeably stood out. I think they will certainly take a look around as we record this. Tim Patrick has in fact been released by the Broncos. They didn't find a trade. That's certainly a high risk move. A good player who's coming off what, back-to-back ACL tears. It's like back. He basically hasn't played in like 2 years, a full season. So, you know, maybe you could go look around for a guy like that. But I think at this point, you hit this time of the year, and it's kind of like, it is kind of funny, I guess, just philosophically. Like, it's like, and I do it too. Like, you obsess over, like, the fifth and sixth spots at these wide receivers. And, like, you know, it was Wallace last year, and he caught, what, like, seven passes all season? Like, it is, like, shockingly, like, relatively low stakes thing, like, and so you're not you know, finding Justin Jefferson out there on the wire or anything. So to like some extent, it's just like, you know, it's Zay Flowers and Rashad Bateman are your receivers this year, and everything else you get from everyone else is sort of a luxury in many ways. But it's still, I don't know, I still obsess over like the idea that like you can't find better than Tylan Wallace. I don't know. It just, sometimes I'm like, are there too many NFL teams if like Tylan Wallace is in a constant year over year battle for like, you know, keeping a roster spot for a guy who's going to catch the ball 15 times? Like, I don't know. It is just like a weird sort of philosophical thing I struggle with, because it does seem like it matters. And I feel like you watch the playoffs and a team like the Chiefs have some like BS play where some guy you've never heard of like catches a touchdown off like a, like they do like the fumble rooski or something, and you're like, why don't we have that? But I don't know, football's a weird sport. So I do think it'll end up being Tylan Wallace, for the reasons Tim said, and I think they might poke around at a Tim Patrick. The other problem though, we just run into being a team that has a great quarterback and is always competing to win, is there's just always a team out there that can throw more money than they should at one of these guys, like a Tim Patrick, who might command a little more money that's floating out there. So, you know, I think at the end they'll probably poke around and just go with Tylan Wallace. And who knows? Maybe they panic. Things aren't working out. Lamar's bad, and you know, maybe they somehow get crazy and trade for like Devontae Adams midseason or something. I don't know. We'll see. But for now, I think it's just kind of going to be a simple pare it down to the six. And yeah, and then just kind of keep it moving.
Jace with a little insider info there.
That's not insider so much.
A certain receiver maybe wanting to... The rumor starts now.
Yeah, guy getting mad that Gardner Minshew's a starting QB.
All right, we will keep you updated as we record here if any other noticeable names come out. But for the moment, we're going to move forward to the AFC North. We're going to do a little roundtable here with the Ravens. Three yearly opponents in Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, and Cleveland, and kind of get a feel for how their offseason has gone, how big of a threat we see them as to the Ravens in the AFC North. And let's start with the Steelers. if we were on YouTube or something during this thing, I would just show the, I think it's Breaking Bad, meme of they can't keep getting away with this, because that is the Steelers. 10-7 last year. They went to the playoffs. That team, that Pittsburgh Steelers team, went to the playoffs with a negative 20-point differential. A negative 643 total yard differential versus opponent for the season, and a record of 9-2 in one score games. 9-2. That's so unsustainable that I say they can't keep getting away with this. This is the year that they do not have a winning record. I'm saying it now, because you cannot possibly keep that type of winning in the NFL. There's too many things that happen that are outside of your control. Too many good teams, too much turnover from roster to roster. They will not go 9-2 this year in one score games. They will lose more games than they win in one score contests, and they will finally fail. So I have them at 8-9 this year, just scratching a playoff spot and scratching for a winning record yet again. But the biggest name for them, no Deontay Johnson. He is officially gone. They were in the mix, apparently, for the 49ers receiver Ayuk. That's kind of cooled off, it seems. I have a feeling that, you know, obviously with them looking for Ayuk, they might add a wide receiver elsewhere, looking for somebody to put on the other side of George Pickens. Guys, what are your thoughts on Pittsburgh obviously getting away with it again this year and getting some sort of stupid winning record and wild card berth?
I'll go quickly here. You know, obviously the quarterbacks of what kind of what stole the headlines, the Russell Wilson and Justin Fields thing. Russell Wilson is almost paying them to work. If like how much the Broncos are paying him, and the Justin Fields thing, I think is kind of in a. I'm almost glad that he's the backup, just because he can do more of that stupid S that we see with the Steelers of like. 3rd and 8, and he misses four guys for the Ravens, miss tackles, and he gets 8.5 yards, and he moves the chains, and they win a game against us. I don't see that out of Russell Wilson. I think Russell Wilson is deader than dead as a starting NFL quarterback. The Steelers, it's weird for me, where I heard this on a podcast today as we record on Tuesday, and I got really worried about the concept of maybe this is a sneaky tank year. Now, the Steelers will never tank. They will never tank. But we could see significant changes, I think, this time next year. One, the prospect got thrown out, which terrified me, was, again, these quarterbacks are on rental deals. And there is a very famous quarterback currently in a contract negotiation who could make his way out of the NFC East and the big old state of Texas and make his way onto the free agent market. And that's where this new era of Steelers football could start. Now, Dak Prescott failing in the playoffs for... not only the Cowboys, but then the Steelers would just be like chef's kiss. But that scared me a little bit. And it didn't get me thinking that Dak was going to be in Pittsburgh next year. But it more got me thinking of, is this kind of the last gasp for the Mike Tomlin era Steelers? Everybody talks about the Mike Tomlin record of, you know, never had a losing season, always finds ways to win, yada, yada, yada. Do you guys know the last time the Steelers won a playoff game? Do you know? Jace knows.
I do know, Antonio, yeah.
Do you know, Antonio?
Let's see. It's 2024.
Yes.
I'll say, 10 years?
It's been 8 years. It's 2016. They have not won the Pittsburgh Steelers have not won a playoff game since 2016. So first of all, stop giving me the Lamar playoff record crap, because that's absolute BS. And second off, I think that this could be it for Mike Tomlin. If this quarterback thing doesn't work out, I think there's enough people. There's obviously been Steelers fans that have wanted Mike Tomlin out for a couple of years now. And everybody goes, you're just a blessed fan base. You don't know like what it's like to be a Carolina Panthers fan. That's BS. You got to keep Tomlin. He's a great coach. And I'm not saying that he wouldn't get a job immediately. And this is kind of the conversation we've had with Harbaugh, although Harbaugh has been more successful, by the way. There needs to be significant improvements in this Steelers team this year. And looking at the roster, guys, I don't see it. I just don't see it with them this season.
I have come to the same conclusion you all have, so congratulations on second place, I guess, to the Steelers. But I'm with you guys. I don't think they can keep getting away with it. Like Tim said, Tomlin's never had a losing record. The Steelers as a team haven't had a losing season since 2003. And it's just like, at some point, you know, that was 20 years ago. At some point, you need to have a losing season. Like, as good as they are, it's just like the lull, like the math, it suggests you should. I think there's just big time concerns that, like, you know, reasons why they will finally have a losing season. I think it starts, as Tim, you were kind of saying, the quarterback battle. The Justin Fields, Russell Wilson, they didn't look good in the preseason at all. There's problems, concerns with their line, you know, like Najee Harris, you know, he's disgruntled with his contract and can be real hit or miss. And
by the way, Broderick Jones, who they kicked over to left tackle, the first round pick last year, has apparently been atrocious at left tackle all camp and all preseason, like you said, on the offensive line.
Yeah, and so like there's that, and then like, yeah, like they trade Deontay Johnson and then just like don't replace him really. So their receivers aren't much. And it just seems like there's just not enough there. Even if I think their defense is going to be pretty good. TJ Watt's still there. Minkah Fitzpatrick's still there. Cam Hayward's still there, right? But I haven't heard much. He was in a contract thing with them at some point. I don't know if that's still ongoing. Like, I mean, Cam Hayward, he's like in like his 14th or 15th season at some point. And, you know, Watt's not getting much younger. And Fitzpatrick, I think, is that same draft as Watt. So, or close around there. So, like, they're, you know, getting sneakily older on that side of the ball, too. And it just does seem like, even if the defense is good, as good a coach as I do think Tomlin is, it just, at some point, he just to quote it again, they can't keep getting away with it. They will end up going like 7-10 at some point. And I think if it's going to happen, it's going to be this year, because I think we'll get into it in a moment. I think the rest of the division is pretty good, even with kind of concerns top to bottom. For every team has some level of, you know, problem with it, which I think is what makes this division intriguing. But I think the more I've just kind of thought on it, and not to tip my hand too much, I think this is the worst team in the AFC North. I think if like they play to what they look like on paper, the Steelers will finish in fourth place.
Yeah, it just feels like a team and a roster that's kind of been held together with Band-Aids for the last several years and just kind of trying to make fewer mistakes than the opposition, or waiting for them to make a mistake and then pouncing on it. Boy, have we seen it with the Ravens games when, I don't know, 9 of the last 10 times the Ravens have been favored and yet haven't been able to actually win, much less cover these games.
They've lost 7 of 8 to the Steelers, the Ravens have, and they'll lose once at least this season. I'm certain
but
of it.
But it does feel like this may be the year where the Band-Aids kind of start to tear, especially if you have the... I think we will be in mid-October and Russell Wilson will have been so mediocre that we'll start seeing Fields play these games, and that's really when the turnover wheels will fall off and the teammates actually start losing consecutive games in a row, which would be fascinating to see. Yeah, I'm with you, Jace. I do have the Steelers last in the AFC North, and I am gonna say that they finished the year under 500. Unbelievable. Cincinnati, the Bengals, looking to rebound and fight with the Ravens for the AFC North and more. My first talking point for this, can Joe Burrow stay healthy? You know, people are wondering. People are asking. Yes, I am mostly making jokes about Lamar Jackson talk. However, Joe Burrow now has missed the back half of two NFL seasons in his young career. So we'll have to see how he comes back. I'm mostly kidding in terms of coming back from a major injury. But also, I kind of forgot this, but started the year injured, really? Had the calf issue that had bothered him all summer and obviously wasn't himself. They looked ugly the first month of the year, and then just when they seemed to get on track is when he had the wrist, you know, ligament thing happen in the Ravens game. So obviously in the NFL you need your quarterback to stay healthy, so they will have to try to get 17 games from him. But they've also had a little bit of turnover in terms of important starters for them. Joe Mixon, longtime running back, has departed. There's been some talk about that being almost like an addition by subtraction thing, with them looking kind of being okay with the over the hill running back moving on. No Boyd, the wide receiver three for them, who was a thorn in a lot of teams' sides when you thought you had stopped Higgins and Jamar Chase, and then all of a sudden Boyd is running wide open on third down. They've lost DJ Reader, but replaced him with Sheldon Rankins, who previously was with Houston. That kind of feels like a like-for-like replacement. And then no Ouzie in the secondary, who wasn't... I mean, he didn't start every game for them, but I feel like every Ravens game we watched, he was very much in the mix and making plays, so happy to see him depart. And replaced by Geno Stone, Ravens interceptor extraordinaire, who I am certain will not have nearly the same number of interceptions this year, but will definitely have one against the Ravens in one of their two games. So let's start with Tim here. Tim, what do you think of how the Bengals are looking this year as a threat for the AFC North?
I certainly think they're the threat. But for me... One, the Geno Stone thing, like the pick that he has against the Ravens is going to be just as fluky as all of the other picks he had for the Ravens, where it's like tipped up in the air and there's nobody around him and he just basket catches it. And it's like, oh, look at Geno Stone making a play. I'm going to disparage him now that he's not on my team. Those were all fluky. I'm sorry. They were. I think we even said it at the time because we're honest here. The defense for me just seems kind of meh. You know, a really down year last year, Dax Hill was a guy that they drafted. Like, the reason they signed Geno Stone and they brought Von Bell back as well to play the safety roles is because they tried to bring in some young safeties there, and it didn't work. They've moved Dax Hill to a corner role, who was the guy they drafted out of Michigan in 2022. So they needed to find stuff out on the fly. They gave up the most explosive plays last year, a la the Ravens defense of a couple of years ago, with big Lou Anarumo there at defensive coordinator. It wasn't, you know, a very down year for that defense side of the football. I do expect them to rebound just a little bit because, like you said, it's not like they lost a ton of guys, but they also haven't really replaced the guys that they needed to. You know, again, talking about Dax Hill, was supposed to be a fill-in for Jesse Bates when Jesse Bates left. That didn't work. Miles Murphy, the 2023 first-round pick, did not pan out and is now going to miss the start of the season. So it's more Sam Hubbard and Trey Hendrickson on either side rushing the passer. It's a fine unit for me, but the offensive side of the ball is where things are interesting. As a Ravens fan, you would be an idiot to doubt Joe Burrow, even though we've done pretty well against the Bengals in recent times. But like, they keep saying this is his first healthy training camp, but he's also been dealing with a wrist injury that like normal quarterbacks don't ever deal with. Apparently it's some like very obscure wrist injury that he hasn't really been throwing a lot during training camp, although he has played just a touch here. That's concerning for a guy who always gets hurt. T. Higgins and Jamar Chase are both playing on their contract years. Jamar Chase has already mentioned how unhappy he is. T. Higgins had a whole dispute before this as well. So both those guys could kind of be, you know, receivers, kind of divas, kind of need to be in for the position they play, and both playing without guaranteed money, that could blow up in your face. I know fantasy people, you know, Jace is drafting right in front of me in our draft on Sunday, and I know he's going to steal every player I like. Spoiler alert, Jace, I don't love Zach Moss or Chase Brown. The fantasy community does. I don't love the Bengals running back options. You're just basically betting on that offensive unit to be great. So, and look, we have plenty of doubts about the Ravens, and we will get to those as well when we talk about that team, throughout the season here on Pod Like a Raven. I know the Bengals are a threat. I am worried about the Bengals, but I look at the roster, and then I think about the questions I have about the team, and it makes me think, at this moment in time, really? That's the team that's going to threaten?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think they're certainly the top threat, and we'll get into a moment. I may be ping-ponging between a certain team we cheer for and them as the top seed. In the division anyway. I will say, I don't think the top seed in the AFC is not coming from the AFC North. There's not going to be a type of season like that from a team this year. It will be the Chiefs are going to be the top seed. So do with that information as you will. But yeah, I think it kind of, Tim, you nailed it. There's some weird contract stuff. Even at some point, Trey Hendrickson had asked for a trade, then he's just back. So there's a bunch of unhappy guys there. Which isn't great for vibes entering a season when, several of your star, like you'd say probably three of your top seven players are in various states of being unhappy. But they did, they did do some work to, in theory, improve that line a little bit. And I think it just kind of all comes down to Burrow. Him being back, I think I don't think, in my mind, I always still have like Josh Allen, I think, is better than him. But Burrow is one of the elite QBs in the league, and I think he can, if he is healthy, he can level out a lot of things. They were rolling for a very brief spell last season in October, basically, when he had kind of shook in the calf thing and before his wrist exploded against us. And, so if he is back, and he has to prove that, because as you guys have noted, he hasn't, I think he kind of can just erase pretty much any issues they might have, and I expect a little bit of a bounce back from the defense. It was kind of weird how bad they were last year after some pretty strong campaigns. But we have to see it. And then even with the offense, their offensive coordinator, even though obviously they have Zach Taylor, it's like a guy who called the plays as the coach or whatever, but they did lose their offensive coordinator. Brian Callahan's now the Tennessee Titans coach. So they have to deal with that too. But yeah, for me, it's just kind of, if Burrow is actually healthy, he had that arrogant quote about the window's my whole career or whatever, but he is that good. So as long as he's there, they can, they will compete for division titles, potentially for Super Bowl titles. I don't think they'll get there this year, but I do think they have a very good chance to win the division this year for the reasons of the concerns we've expressed about the Ravens, if the Ravens offensive line stinks, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, I think of all the teams in the AFC North that aren't the Ravens, this is certainly the best squad.
The last team, maybe the funniest, usually the funniest, the Cleveland Browns. I don't know whether they're going to be fighting for last place in this division or fighting for first place. They have,
yep,
I don't know, I'm not gonna say questions of quarterback, but they know who their starter is, I think. But we haven't seen the best version of Deshaun Watson, I don't know, since the Steelers last won a playoff game, like somewhere in that range of time. The funniest thing, Jace, I'm just going to take this thing, this news clip. It's too good. The Browns apparently are keeping, at least for the moment, four quarterbacks, not two, not three, not four, not five, not six. Four quarterbacks, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, Jameis Winston, Tyler Huntley, all sticking for now on the 53-man roster. They are apparently maybe trying to trade one of them, but it's just, that's so Browns, is them having so much faith in their $230 million guaranteed money quarterback to keeping three different guys as backups to him. That's just where this conversation starts.
Here's the best part, though, Jace, real quickly on this. They're keeping, according to Mary Kay Abbott of The Athletic, they're keeping DTR. They're keeping DTR, but they're trading Jameis Winston, backup who has performed well in situations, and Tyler Huntley, backup who has performed fine in situations. DTR stinks. Yeah, that guy's terrible.
That was easiest game the Ravens won all season last year, was his start. Like, it's a very confusing. I guess he's the cheapest of the four of them. But even just going, like, not cutting one, it's just so confusing to keep. Just, even if you are trading one of those guys, it's like, we talked about this when they signed Huntley. It's like, why did you even bring all four in? It's just astonishing. And you nailed it, Antonio. It's astonishing given that you are paying the starter the highest guaranteed money of all time in his $250 million contract. It's just like, I think Watson's proven, like, he was suspended for 11 games, right, his first season, and then he played like 5 games last year between various injuries before he was knocked out for the year. And so I don't have like faith in him, but it's just like, clearly the coaching staff or the front office, someone doesn't, because otherwise they wouldn't have brought 4 QBs to camp. They probably wouldn't be taking 3 QBs. If you're paying Watson that much money, I know they have the 3 QB rule now, but really, if you're paying Watson that much guaranteed money, he should be like your 16-game starter, and then you just have one backup in case things go awry, and it's fine if it's Jameis Winston, who's started a ton of games in the NFL, if you want a slightly more experienced backup. But yeah, to bring all 4 guys, it just like, it speaks to them not trusting Watson to either stay healthy or just his play in general, because we haven't seen him be good since 2020. That was his last year with the Texans. And then that was 4 years ago. He's been, was the last time he was that good. So I don't know. Yeah, it's just, it's baffling. It's very Browns. It's funny to laugh at. It's funny to, just the thought process, like everything about it is very funny to me that they are taking 4 quarterbacks. But like you said, I think they'll be good. It does all hinge on if Watson's good, because if he stinks, they're not going much of anywhere. They'll be a 500 team, 9-8, maybe up to 10-7. But if he's like any good at all, the Browns could easily go like 12-5. This is a team that has like a lot of talent, especially on the defensive side of the ball. But I don't know. I mean, he is just like, to be paying that much money for such a question mark is just not where you want to be as a team, certainly. It's funny because it's the Browns.
We've talked roster issue. Like, 53 sounds like a big number. Not a big number when you have to find talent, starters, depth, special teams. If they have, I mean, they probably will not do this. I pray they do, but I don't think they will do this. If they end up keeping 3 of them on the active 53 and then one of them on the like elevation thing, like they have to put them somewhere, these players. So if they're taking a roster spot to have an extra backup when the Ravens are struggling to keep like an 8th corner or something like this, a starter who's played games because they want to make sure they have the most roster flexibility, it just speaks to mismanagement of the limited space that you have on an NFL roster. Elsewhere for them, that's not great. Nick Chubb confirmed to miss the first 4 games. He's on that short PUP list. It's also probably not the best sign for him, just season long. Suffered a terrible leg injury at the beginning of last season. So the fact that we've gotten all the way to here, and it does not sound like he's really close to ready. I saw somewhere about kind of where he was in the process of getting back, but he is not like, I think I am getting this right, but he was not like practicing with the team. He was still doing some of those like drills on the side, like the running on the side kind of thing. They're obviously going to be very, very careful with him. So missing the first 4 may kind of just be the beginning, and they'll see if they can try to get him maybe in the second half or even later than that. The big addition for them, Jerry Jeudy. I don't know. trying to fill the wide receiver 2 role there. He's sort of, at this point, not met that first-round draft pick expectation, I would say. He'll try to do that with Cleveland. And then the defense is essentially unchanged from last season. They added Jordan Hicks for the linebacking crew, but this is a matter of, can the defense win them games again? Can they keep them in every game? That was kind of what they were doing with Joe Flacco there in the second half. I mean, Flacco obviously did some elite things in December football, but a lot of it was, how is this game still 17-13 kind of thing? And then Flacco would make a play or something would happen. So it'll be interesting. About what do you guys think for the Browns can do kind of as a team, filling out the AFC North?
I mean, just quickly on that, I think there's an argument that if you took the quarterbacks out of every roster on the AFC North, the Browns have the best roster. Like, if it's just like, if the game doesn't play with quarterbacks, they have the best roster. Problem is, it's far and away the most important position on the field, and it's not even close. And they have a guy there that they're paying, remember, $235 million fully guaranteed, the first ever fully guaranteed contract in NFL history, the one that we thought Lamar Jackson was going to want forever and ever and ever and ever and never happened because the Ravens are sensible and the Browns are not. He hasn't been good since 2020. That's 4 years from now. That was during COVID, which feels like a fever dream, was the last time he was good. And that's the guy that they're going to want them to lead them to the promised land. It's just... I don't know what to say about the Browns because so much of this hinges on... I mean, you look at the offensive line. The offensive line had a couple injuries. Great. The weapons. Amari Cooper, aging like a fine wine. Great. Nick Chubb went healthy. Great. Jerome Ford, serviceable. David Njoku finally broke out as a tight end and is still very young because he was drafted very young in 2017 in the first round. Great. Defensive line, scary. Miles Garrett, one of the best defensive players in the league. Linebackers, fantastic. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, one of the best linebackers in the National Football League, one of the quickest linebackers in the National Football League. Denzel Ward, arguably the best corner in the National Football League. Good safeties. Greg Newsome on the other side of him as well. It's just, it all looks so good. And then they're going to get Deshaun Watson there. Like, I would feel more confident in this team if they just said F it and brought back Joe Flacco to start. I'm fully convinced the reason they're trying to move on from Jameis Winston is because their entire social media strategy for the preseason was look at Jameis Winston pregame speeches and whittle Deshaun Watson got mad at that. Like, I because he's the star of the show. If I'm a Browns fan, I am furious with how this is going because this is the best roster this team has had since they reformed in 1999. I think it's the best one they've had. Low bar, sure, but I do think it is the best one they've had, and it's going to go to hell in a handbasket because they have a guy that can't play quarterback.
Yeah, it's not a good sign for the Browns that it does seem like every backup they bring in is more liked by his teammates than the starter, be it Jacoby Brissett or Joe Flacco or Jameis now, maybe. You mentioned the line, though, Tim. That is at least a little bit of a concern, I think, just for them, because they are a little banged up there. Is it Jedrick Wills, right? He's... might be on the pup or iffy to return. And they did lose Bill Callahan, which everyone swears he's like the best offensive line coach or one of the best in the NFL. And he went to go join his son, who we mentioned, Brian Callahan, with the Titans. So given that and with Chubb out, I do think, you know, the run game might take a little bit of step back. And if that impacts Watson too, that's something to just keep an eye on. It all does, as you guys said, though, it all comes back to Watson. If he's good at all, the Browns could be one of the better teams in the league. But I don't know. It's hard for me to say with certainty he's going to be, as you guys have said. Like, it's been 4 years. Like, can you just become good again if you haven't been good in 4 years? It's pretty rare that that happens. So we'll see. I'm kind of copping out and just saying they're going to finish third and maybe in a wild card spot. I do think Stefanski seems like a good coach and all that, but yeah, they're by far the hardest kind of team to peg because I feel like every other team in the division, I have a sense of what they're capable of. I mean, the Steelers are hard just because Tomlin could somehow get them to 9-8 or 10-7 and in the wild card mix, but yeah, the Browns are like the most, I think, wide variance team because there's paths for them to like make a Super Bowl run, and there's also like a path where they go like 7-10 or even 6-11 if things just completely fall apart. So yeah, they're the weirdest team. I hope it's that they go the fall apart route because that would be funny, and and the most enjoyable for us, I think. But yeah, they're definitely the weirdest team in this division, I think.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's run through our predictions for how this division shakes out. I'm happy to go first here, and it'll tie very well into our next segment where we tackle some over-unders, our favorite ones. But I'm going to force my co-hosts to pick an over-under for the Ravens. But for the AFC North, I see it from bottom to top. I'm going to comfortably, happily put the Steelers in fourth. I see them in the 7-10. 8-9 range. I'm going to put the Browns third in the 9-8. Kind of, yeah, huh? I'll sit there with them at 9-8. I'm going to put the Bengals second, somewhere in the 10-7 to maybe even 11 and actually better than 10-7. I'll say 11-6 for the Bengals. And your Baltimore Ravens, shockingly, I know, I'm putting them first in the AFC North, with a record that I'll get into in a little bit. But I'll let my co-host go through the AFC North first.
Tim, do you want me to go, or do you have your list?
Yeah, so not to spoil the over-under for the Ravens, but I think three of these teams will be within two games of each other. Like, I think this is going to be a classic dogfight AFC North. Every game means a lot, and if you drop one to a lesser opponent, it could screw you in terms of winning the division and maybe even playoff seeding. I won't say what that number is because we'll get into that later. I will go... I hate putting the Ravens first. My skin is crawling putting the Ravens first. But right now, I will do it. I will put the Browns second. I think the Browns' talent is good enough, as much as we just did that whole dance song and dance. Like, Deshaun Watson, if they end up just... Now, if they keep DTR and trade both Huntley and Jameis, throw this out the window. But if Jameis stays and Jameis ends up being the backup, or Deshaun Watson finds some way of being competent, I think that team is good enough to make them second. I'll put the Bengals third. I think there's too many weird things with the Bengals, and I could eat my hat there. Again, I think those three are all within... It could be even a game at when all is said and done. It could be... tiebreakers, coin flips, all that stuff. I think they're all kind of neck and neck in that way. So I will go Ravens, Browns, Bengals, and then I'll put the Steelers last. And not too worried about it, to be honest.
I'm also putting the Steelers in last. They are my fourth place team. I am going with the Cleveland Browns in third, mainly for their variance. I do think they can compete and be in the wild card mix.
Do it for the pessimist, Jace.
Well, I am. The Ravens in second.
he'd been teasing this all episode, I feel like. It's a little bit of sadness.
Bengals, yeah, I think the Bengals win the AFC North this year. The more I sit on it, it's not even that I feel that strongly about the Bengals. I do think they have, like, concerns. It's just kind of a faith in Burrow. Their schedule seems a little easier than what the Ravens are kind of working with. Because they were the fourth place team, right, in the division last year. So they have an easier schedule. And I have just some concerns with the Ravens. And I just kind of think, yeah, we'll find just a hiccup here or there, maybe more than last year. The margins are small in the NFL. And, I think the Bengals leapfrog the Ravens and win the division this year. Which I like that we don't all have the same us winning the division and slightly different finishing orders and all that. But yeah, that's if you call it pessimistic, that's my pessimistic pick is second place wild card appearance for your Baltimore Ravens this year.
Oh, well, this just dovetails perfectly into over-unders. Let's get into it. We're going to start with the Ravens each, and then we'll get into some of our other picks. I'm going to go first with the Ravens because I'm gonna fight Jace, basically. So it was good that he has them second in the North. The line for
Baltimore. Are you saying you have an idea of what my over under is?
I have a hunch. Or you could just be just really bullish on Cincinnati and have the Ravens second and still somehow over. The line for Baltimore is 10.5 wins. Obviously, you can move these lines up and down, but sort of the standard line for them is 10.5. And I am going over for the Ravens. And I have a long answer and a short answer to this. The short answer being Lamar Demetrius Jackson. He has won 75% of the football games he has started. He has had bad receiver, and this is perfect. I had this written ahead of time, and then Tim just queued it up at the beginning of this episode. He has had bad receivers. He has had bad running backs. He has had injury-riddled defenses. Yes, he has even had bad offensive lines. It has not mattered. If he is upright, they will win 3 out of every 4 games they play, which would be a 13-win season, which is what happened last year when they went 13-3 in the games that he actually played. In December, Lamar Jackson is 17-3. So when we get to the end of the season, when they are likely to be in a race with the Bengals for the division, our guy is the one who's 17 out of 20 with trying to win those important games to try to go 11 wins, 12 wins. I think the O-line is bad to mediocre, but probably gets better as the season gets along. I think we've seen the worst of it in the preseason, and it will not be nearly as bad once we actually have starters playing. I think having a bona fide running back matters more to this team than maybe any other team in the National Football League. We run the ball more than anybody. We throw it less than anybody. I think both wide receiver 1 and wide receiver 2 on this team have the best seasons of their careers thus far. Obviously for Zay Flowers, not so difficult considering it's year 2, but I think he takes a step up, and I think Bateman has a career year with 400 receiving yards. I think tight end 2, Isaiah Likely, will protect the issues that we may or may not have with Mark Andrews, where we kind of have a tight end 1.5 playing as tight end 2. And then defensively, we talked about it already. I think they're going to be above average to great, even with the losses. The secondary will be elite. The linebacker play will be above average. The defensive line play will be above average. The pass rushers will be probably slightly worse than they were last season without Clowney. But I think Owe, Van Noy, and Ojabo do enough to be a below average group, but not a terrible group. In the pass rush, the team will regress from losing 3 games with their starters to losing 5 or 6, and the team thus covers 10.5 wins. This is how I have it. Baltimore Ravens, 11-12 wins, somewhere in there. That's enough. It covers the 10.5.
These are all fantastic points. But I'm going to paraphrase the iconic Peter LaFleur in the movie Dodgeball. I found that if you have no expectations, that you might not reach them. But if you have expectations that... Wait, excuse me. I screwed it up. No, this whole moment is ruined. I don't have any expectations for the Ravens, so I'm not going to be upset. I'm taking the under. That sucks. I even pulled it up here, and then I tried to paraphrase it and completely ruined it. I'm taking the under. I think this could all go to hell in a handbasket, and that hell in a handbasket is 10-7. 10-7 feels nice and cozy to me. I said it after we lost to the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. I'm done going 13-4. I'm done winning divisions. It's not fun. Who wants that? Because then you're just sweating 1 week of the playoffs while everybody else is playing, and then you get another week where everybody talks up the teams that got advanced through because they're the teams they just saw, so it's a week of that. Then you got to sweat C.J. Stroud, the golden boy in his Texas. You squeak by that one, you end up winning that one, and then this is finally the Ravens' year because look how good they are. They're 13-4. They're fantastic. I don't know why I'm talking in sports radio voice now. Everything's going to be fine, and then you blow it. You blow it as the favorite every single time. I don't care about any of the salient points you just made, Antonio. This team is going under and then maybe making that just beautiful, sweet, nobody believes in us run at the end of this season and lifting the Lombardi. Is that going to happen? No, because I'm an ultimate pessimist. It's not going to happen, but maybe. And the only way it does is if the Ravens go under. I'm so mad I screwed up that Peter LaFleur comment. I'm so annoyed at myself. But yeah, I don't have expectations. And you know what? I'll get this part. It feels phenomenal.
We will win a wild card game and lose in the divisional round because the Ravens, I agree with Tim, are going 10-7. They're going under. plus 100 plus odds on the Ravens under, by the way. And yeah, it's for basically all the points, similar points Tim outlined, but I do just think the regression is going to come. Everything went so well last year. The line's going to be worse. They will have more injuries than they did. It seems inevitable. And yeah, I just, it's hard to, it's just 12 or it's 11 wins. I mean, Vegas is too good at this. That's my annual takeaway from this sort of exercise. There were very few lines I liked, very few takes, teams I felt very strongly with. But I just kept circling back to that Ravens under. I looked through the schedule and I just, to exactly as Tim said, like, I just see 10-7 every time I look at the Ravens schedule. It's not an easy schedule. I think the team's worse. And, you know, it doesn't feel like that big a regression, but just 3 wins takes you from 13-4 in the number one seed to 10-7. Flip those 3 results. And, you know, they didn't play a ton of close games last year, so maybe that encourages you. But I do just think the team is a little worse kind of across the board, and I'm expecting injuries to kind of, you know, rear its head a little bit and be a problem. So that's why I'm on the Ravens under. That is why I have the Ravens in second place as a wild card team that I do believe wins a playoff game before, I don't know, we'll say lose to Buffalo in the divisional round or something. But, yeah, I don't know. I just see the under this year. That 10.5 just felt too much to me.
I know one of these days Antonio is going to be like, "I've had it enough. I had enough of you guys. I can't do. I can't stop having toxic people in your life. Stop having the negativity." And he's going to turn off the headset. But not yet.
Sometimes it's good. Right. Sometimes I need it. You know, a little bit of water to cool down. Jace, why don't you go through some of your over-unders that you like this year.
Yes, so I went hunting for plus money in this activity. So I like that. Everything I wrote down here is plus. I'll go with the ones I actually feel the strongest about, which are, a trio of unders that I feel strong about. Chargers under 8.5. I thought that one jumped out to me as just overly optimistic about the Harbaugh era. This is a team that went 5-11 last season. And yes, Brandon Staley's an awful coach, and I think Jim Harbaugh's a great coach and is certainly going to build the culture there. But this just team doesn't, like, have talent in some places. Like, they're going to run the ball a ton.
Is that bad, Jace?
Yeah, like, they don't have receivers, which I know they don't care that they don't have receivers, because Jim Harbaugh is now their coach and he hired Greg Roman to run the offense. So not that receiver is a big concern for them, but even if they run the ball, you know, it's Gus Edwards and it's J.K. Dobbins and it's, you know, guys that we love here, but who kind of, I think we thought the wheels kind of came off a little on them. And it just seems like they need like more on defense that they didn't really. You know, everyone thought they'd kind of lose Khalil Mack and lose Joey Bosa this season, and they didn't pull the cord on either of those. It just feels like a team in transition with a number that's just a lot higher, because I think Vegas is going to key on people who just see Jim Harbaugh and think they're going to win a lot of games. But I don't see the Chargers going from 5-11 to a winning record. And that's plus 118, by the way, for that under 8.5. And then 2 playoff teams from last season that kind of jumped out to me, whose unders I liked. One of the biggest numbers I have, or in terms of the plus odds, Rams under 8.5, plus 122. This is a team that lost Aaron Donald, who everyone agrees is one of the greatest defensive players of all time. He just retired. You can't replace that. And they didn't, because there is no way to replace him. And it's very reliant on Matt Stafford, who, this hurts to say, is the second oldest full-time starting quarterback in the entire NFL. It's Aaron Rodgers at 40, and then it's Matty Staff. And I just, I don't know. He's been dealing with ongoing kind of injury concerns for a few years, and I just see a path where the wheels kind of fall off. This team was awful 2 years ago. They get back in the playoffs with it was 10-7 campaign right last season, but I could see them having a regression. You know, Cooper Kupp gets hurt all the time. Stafford could get hurt. And they don't have Aaron Donald. So that was kind of that. And then just the other one I just want to hit for now. And I have a few other ones jotted down. But of the unders I liked a lot was the Dolphins under, Miami Dolphins under 9.5 at plus 110 odds. This team got worse. That's full stop. Like, they're missing their top two pass rushers, got hurt midway through, you know, last season. They don't have them. They lose Christian Wilkins. You know, say what you want about Vic Fangio. He leaves, replaced with Anthony Weaver, right? That's where he ended up. Or is he? I forget which one. If it was Weaver, Wilson.
I believe that's right. Yeah, Anthony Weaver.
Yeah, I think. And then Denard Wilson ended up in Tennessee. So yeah, Weaver replaced him. But you know, Fangio, a prickly guy, but gets results as a DC, and now he's gone. And I don't know. It's a team that like went 10-7 with as good as their offense looks. It's a team that was a 10-7 wildcard team that lost in the first round and got worse. And I just don't see. How are they going 10-7 again, I guess? And so that's kind of that might be my most hater pick of all these, maybe the least based in sound logic. But it just seems like to me like there's value there. It's a team everyone thinks going to be good. But I think of all the playoff teams, you know, they might have been hit some of the hardest of all these teams. And it's just hard for me to say a team that's really never proven anything yet in the McDaniel era that they're going to win 10 games. So that's my kind of last one for now. And I have a few others we can touch on real quick later, but I want to, you know, hear what you all have. But those were three of the ones I liked the most in terms of the unders.
So I'll give you my three that I like before this. And I made this bet earlier and I was fully ready to come in here and kind of shock you guys. And then I decided after looking at some more stuff and then some recent developments over the past couple of weeks with this team, I had the New England Patriots over 4.5. I still have it. I do not think they are in the class of the New York Giants and the Carolina Panthers. In this league, and I know there's all this weird stuff about the offensive line. Gerard Mayo, like as recently as Tuesday, is like saying different things about who's going to start the season at quarterback. Christian Barmore, who's probably their best player, is now probably going to be out for the year with some. I think it was a blood clot issue. Matthew Judon got traded to Atlanta. That doesn't mean much to me, but that you know it's significant for that roster. I still have it. I didn't cash out my ticket on my favorite sports betting app. Sponsorships are available. But over 4.5 is what I took them at. It was minus 150, but I took them. I'm going to go a little bit different here from Jace. I'm going to go with the ones I'm least confident to most confident in my three. And this is my only other minus number here in terms of trying to hunt for pluses, as Jace said. I'm going the Seattle Seahawks over 7.5. I think Mike McDonald is going to make an instant impact on that defense that really has some talent already. You look at, Condre Diggs? Tyreek Woolen is what I'm thinking of. Sorry. Tyreek Woolen, the fourth round pick a couple years ago. Struggled last year, but definitely the talent is there. Byron Murphy, who is the defensive tackle out of Texas that they drafted, could be a sneaky candidate for defensive rookie of the year. I think he's that special, especially in a class that famously did not have anybody picked until Laiatu. By the Indianapolis Colts around the 15th pick. So could be a fun pick there as well. And the Seattle offense, Danny Kelly from The Ringer put this out, noted Seahawks fan. Their offense last year was so atrocious and ran, I think it was the least amount of plays in the National Football League. And they simply are just going to run more plays under the new University of Washington offensive coordinator who's taking over. I believe in Geno Smith, not as, you know, an elite guy, but as a good quarterback in this league. They've got the talent. They've got Jaxon Smith-Njigba in his second year. DK Metcalf. I really like DK Metcalf. Kenneth Walker is there. I just think this offense is going to be much better than it was. Mike McDonald's going to have a significant impact on that defense. And then the 49ers, to me, I'm not sitting here saying that they're going to be bad, but they are a prime Super Bowl hangover candidate. They just lost to the Chiefs again. There's not a lot of people that are happy. Brandon Ayuk is trying to force his way out. Christian McCaffrey is already hurt. They're going to have to pay Brock Purdy soon, so that's going to be this whole thing looming over their season. That is a team ripe for a downgrade. And I think that Seattle can kind of not overtake them, but be more competitive in that NFC West. A lot of people are buying Cardinals hype like just thinking like, you know, they're not going to be terrible. They might be like competitive. I'm not buying it. I'm just not with the Cardinals and Jonathan Cannon. Pew, pew, shot plays and all that stuff from him. I'm not buying it. And then if you look at the schedule wins for me, Broncos, Pats, Giants, Vikings. That's four. Remember, the total is 7.5. And then my maybes are Falcons. Who knows with the Falcons, and more on them later. The Jets. Who knows if Aaron Rodgers is hurt. I had the Vikings twice. Apologies. And then the Bears are my third one there. The Bears could be this team that everybody falls in love with, and then it's not happening this year, and it is later in the year there as well. That's seven wins before any division games, if you want to take the three maybes. All you need is one division win at that point. So then you get two wins against Arizona. Maybe you surprise the Niners once. You beat LA once. I think 7.5 is a little too low for the Seahawks, so I'm taking the over there. Now let's get negative. Let's move to a team I bet the under on last year, so fair warning, I bet the under on the Las Vegas Raiders, and I'm doing it again this year. The Las Vegas Raiders for me, I bet the under last year, and it was under Josh McDaniels, and that was my whole point of betting the under for the Raiders. Josh McDaniels is a terrible coach. Well, he was a terrible coach, and then they fired him, and they reeled off a bunch of wins, and they blew open the over. I think they won 8 games. That kind of sucked. But I don't believe in Antonio Pierce nor Gardner Minshew. I don't believe in the new head coach that they hired, the rah-rah guy, who, guess what he does? He takes over for the guy everyone hated and just uses pure adrenaline and energy to get them to the finish line. Is that going to work in year two for Antonio Pierce? I have my doubts. And we all love Gardner Minshew. We do. He's great. He's a great character. But that guy is your starter? Like, he's going to be the one to start games? He'll win some crazy games for you. I think he's going to lose more than he wins. I believe a little bit in Jim Harbaugh, Jace. I'm not saying the 8.5. I'm staying away from that because I could just see the 9. I think that's a little juice because everybody loves Harbaugh. I believe in Harbaugh to make a mess of that division in some games, and the Raiders are part of that. I think the Raiders are going to be competing with the Broncos for worst team in that division. Devontae Adams is going to ask for a trade at some point. Antonio said it, like, Ravens, that would be sweet. Yeah, he's going to ask for a trade at some point. I then remember when the Raiders mocked Patrick Mahomes in training camp? Anybody remember that? Anybody remember that? I do. They showed up with a Kermit the Frog doll with a Patrick Mahomes jersey and haircut. The Chiefs saw it. The Chiefs are going to beat them in 2 games by a combined 100 points. Like, mark my words, the spread could be as high as you want. I'm taking the Chiefs in those 2 games. I think that's utterly ridiculous. And then you look at other opponents for the Raiders, the AFC North, the Dolphins away from home in Miami, the Rams away, who, by the way, and I don't have them on here, I'm high on the Rams, unlike Jace, but we don't have to delve too deep into that more. The Bucks away, they play the Falcons. If you buy into the Falcons, I buy that they're better than the Raiders. The Chargers twice. Do the Broncos steal one? That's 9 right there. And that's not even counting the Chiefs. So I'm just under 6.5. It's a low number, but at plus 116, I have a feeling that the Raiders could be picking in the top 3 next year. I think this could all implode in front of our eyes, so 6.5 is too high for me. Then the other one that's too high for me, and the one that I think I'm the most confident in, that actually has the best odds of any bet I'm making, is the Philadelphia Eagles under 10.5 at plus 120. I think there is a very, very, very real chance that this team looks wildly different at this point next year from what they look like right now. I think Jalen Hurts, this is a bigger year than we think for old Jalen Hurts. Remember, Carson Wentz fell off a cliff as well. Like, I think we could be seeing that sort of drop off from Jalen Hurts, and I'll tell you why. First off, does anybody remember how that season ended? Anybody? I had A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts on my fantasy team, so I know it went poorly. It went very, very badly. They went 10-1, what, to start the year?
Oh, yeah.
Fell all the way back down to earth, and then were embarrassed in the playoffs. Now Jalen Hurts is openly feuding with Nick Sirianni, and he has been throughout the entirety of last season, and is continuing to do so to the point where the head coach and quarterback can't be in the same room together without somebody mediating that. Kellen Moore has come in. Everybody's like, oh, Kellen Moore, great offensive coordinator. Jalen Hurts has said that he's replacing 95% of the offense. We're expecting that to just go smoothly? I have my doubts. And then Jason Kelce is gone. Jason Kelce is not only maybe the greatest center of all time, but was the reason why the tush push worked, and also was the one making all the blitz checks and other calls at the line of scrimmage. There is a video, a famous video of Jalen Hurts trying to make a check at the line. Jason Kelce looking at him like, what are you doing? That's my job. You don't do that around here. And he's gone. And that guy is gone. He's not only a personality, but he was super, super important for that team. Then you look at some opponents. They have the Packers in Brazil. I love the Packers this year. And it's technically an Eagles home game. So they do lose one home game. Then you have the Falcons. If you buy the hype, I'm wishy-washy on that. They play the AFC North, so they got to play all those teams we just talked about. They play the Bucks in Tampa, who beat the brakes off of them in the playoffs. They play the Rams away, who, again, I believe in. They play the Cowboys twice. That's nine games I could easily see them losing and making that, you know, and already hitting my under. So I just, at plus 120, I think 10.5 is too high for this Eagles team that is a lot. Where there's smoke, there's fire with the issues with the Philadelphia Eagles, I think. And so I'm just concerned, if I was an Eagles fan, that this could all blow up in your face in about a year.
I like a lot of these picks. The one that I had is the Seahawks. I am with Tim, laid that out perfectly. That number is too low. It's a bad price. I saw it, but somewhere in like minus 144, minus 150 territories. It's a bad price, but... it's a bad price because it's a bad line. 7.5 is too low for that team. McDonald is going to fix the defense. I'm not Geno Smith's biggest fan either, but I feel like he's the definition of like just good enough to win football games, to like be a positive difference maker at the end of games. And then that schedule Tim brought up is perfect. So I'm taking that one 100%. I'm even tempted to move that. If you move it to 8.5 wins and an over, the line is plus 130, and now you have my attention. Before you had my curiosity, now you have my attention. But I'll probably end up sitting with that 7.5 because, as Jace said, Vegas is too good at this, so don't try to get cute and move things around. But I see them finishing like 9-8, 8-9 to cover that 7.5. I have a few honorable mentions that I'm not officially taking, but I can't believe I'm going to say this one out loud. I kind of liked the Jets over 10.5. It's plus 115. I don't really want it to happen, which is why I'm not taking it. I'm leaving it in honorable mentions. But it's almost like right now that roster is so good that if Aaron Rodgers plays like half the season and then inevitably gets hurt, Tyrod Taylor is like such a serviceable backup that I almost can see them like picking the slack up and getting to 11 wins anyway. If he has to play like five games this season, I could see them still going 3-2. They had some of the most abominable quarterback play in the history of the NFL last season. That will not be the case this year, even if Rodgers doesn't play. But 10.5, that's a high number. It's the Jets. I'm not doing it. So I'm not going into that one. And then the Texans over 9.5, I liked as well. The price on that's terrible. It's minus 140. The bandwagon is like a little bit too full for me to officially hop on for the Texans. But 9.5 seems low for a good team with a good coach and a good quarterback. So honorable mentions there. I am set with the Ravens. I am set with the Seahawks. And then my last one. And I might need to, you know, just between you and me, listeners, I might need to like turn off my other two co-hosts here or just like tell them that the episode's over so that you and me can just talk, because I don't think they're going to be happy with this one. But it's an under. It's plus odds. And I'm a sucker for overs, so I kind of had to force myself to be okay with this one. But the fact that I'm a little uncomfortable tells me that I'm onto something. It's the Lions under 10.5 wins. It feels to me that 2023 was their perfect season. Everything broke right. They had good health. They had all this momentum. They had the crowd back at the stadium. They were going for two, even though they had to get like 12 yards to convert in some cases. He was still going for two. Goff looked great. Then there's this like, they're ready for the next step, right? They're ready. This is the year now. They've gotten the experience out of the way. Now this is, they take that extra leap to the Super Bowl. But this stuff isn't linear, especially in the NFL. This stuff does not, it just doesn't work that way. They went 12-5 last year. They were 5-3 in one score games, which is pretty positive. Their expected win loss was actually 10-7 based on like points scored, yards, yada, yada, yada. Their expected win-loss was 10-7. They played in a division that had the Vikings with just a mess at quarterback. They played the Bears, who had the Fields experiment. And they had the Packers, who obviously started very, very slow before turning it on in like the last month of the season. They were 3-3 against teams that made the playoffs that year. And they played a second-place schedule. This year, they're a known quantity. They are no longer that like surprise, fun, frisky team. They are circled on people's schedules. They have to play a first-place schedule. They have road games against the 49ers, against the Texans, and against the Cowboys. But going in division now, they're going to have two games against the Bears. Those should be tough games all of a sudden. They have two against the Packers, who are a lot of people's Super Bowl pick for the NFC. And even the Vikings are going to be tougher to play against than they were last year. Sam Darnold is a better quarterback than the mess that the Vikings had last year between the astrophysicist and the valet attendant and the other guy that they had playing quarterback. Sam Darnold at least is like veteran stability at that position. Their biggest acquisition was essentially Carlton Davis, who missed 16 games over the last three seasons. That's who they got to try to shore up their secondary, which was atrocious last year. And then Kevin Zeitler from the Ravens. Great. He's a guard. I'm not sure how many, you know, wins above replacement Kevin Zeitler got you. I think this team drops two games from that. That's all it has to be. They have to go from 12 wins to 10, and you're hitting this under, and that's not even assuming any sort of major injuries happen. They could go 3-3 in the division, lose two of those tough road games, 49ers, Texans, Cowboys, and you have five of their seven losses already accounted for. They'd have to lose two other games somewhere in the season, in any other game in the season, and you're hitting this under at 10.5. I just think they're going to come a little bit more down to earth and finish at like 10-7, 9-8, 10-7. So I'm doing it. It's plus 110. I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued, and I am officially taking the under on Detroit. Can't have nice things 2 years in a row, basically.
I don't hate it. I mean, I can see it. It's hard to imagine the Lions being a perennial juggernaut as a team.
And then there's the Jared Goff. Like, we've seen this before, too. Like, he looks great, and then the following season, oh my goodness, we need to get rid of this guy. Yeah. He can't be our quarterback of the future. That's literally already happened to him in his career. I think he had the feel-good, you know, comeback season, and you know, now they're more noticed around the league. So I have a feeling about that one. Anything else, guys, before we close up here?
Well, I have one over if I could throw out that intrigued me. You guys scared me off the 49ers over, and I had jotted down Cowboys under, but I'm also scared of that. CeeDee Lamb back in the building, a little less certain that the Cowboys will be mid, as the kids say. But for the one over I want to go with, and it's the most or the best odds of any thing I have given out, is the Buffalo Bills over 10.5 is plus 134. This kind of goes dovetails with my not belief in the Dolphins and my I don't know what to expect from the Jets with their 40-year-old quarterback off an Achilles tear. It's just the Bills have not lost under 10. The Bills have won at least 11 games every season since 2020. And even though they're obviously a team in transition, I do believe that Josh Allen is one of the three best quarterbacks in the NFL. And I think the other teams in that division got worse. I think the Pats might be pretty bad. I know, Tim, you had talked about maybe they're over potentially, but
don't love it anymore. I will say that.
Yeah. And it just, you know, their schedule's not easy, but it hasn't been easy any of these years. They seem to find a way to get to 11 wins. And so I just kind of think they can manage to get to 11 or 12 again. And yeah, if they do, plus 134. It's not the, I don't know, it kind of just jumped out to me for a team that does this every year that seemed like decent odds.
I do. I actually really love that one because I think people are sleeping on the Bills a bit where I get it with the Jets, but who knows? I think, you know, they're just, everybody's crowding their asses, as the late Denny Green would say. which I just think, I don't know if that's necessarily where you need to be, and I kind of agree on the Dolphins. I have one more bonus one that I meant to reveal, and I will admit, I wrote one of my notes as just hype. It's not as hype anymore, as the kids say, because when I got this, it was plus 100, but it is now minus 126. So you could still have it if you want, but obviously the value is a little bit different. Derrick Henry, over 10.5 rushing touchdowns. Since 2018, here are Derrick Henry's totals. Even with the Titans being bad, or the regression of the bad offensive line, or whatever. 12, 16, 17, 10, 13, 12. Only one of those wouldn't hit the 10.5. And I just tend to believe Derrick Henry, who's going to be the bell cow here, 10.5 seems low for a guy that gets a lot of scores. And it's not going to be Lamar Jackson running in from the one. You know, we've made jokes when he was an enemy that maybe he's not the best short yardage back for how big he is. I think he's going to be better than Lamar Jackson. Put him in goal line. Put Pat Ricard there. It's going to be just fine.
And Gus had, what, 13, 14 TDs last season?
Yeah, exactly. Gus Edwards had around that total last year. So I know it's the juice is not as good right now. It's currently at minus 126 on your favorite gambling app. Sponsorships are available. But I did get it at plus 100. But just something to look at there. Derrick Henry, over 10.5 rushing touchdowns.
I like that. I like that. One thing we wanted to say quickly, sort of a sad note to close, but wanted to bring it up anyway. As everybody probably knows, the Ravens offensive line coach Joe DeLisandre passed away on Sunday. So just wanted to note that. Obviously, a really sad thing to hear. Even just given how quickly this seemed to happen, based on him stepping away from the team, and having that happen. Unfortunately, we saw a lot of amazing reaction from media, from the Ravens organization, from players, from former players. Seemed to be just a beloved figure in the Ravens organization. So we did want to note that our thoughts are obviously with his family in this time. But we will be back next week, guys. Next week to preview a real Ravens football game. We're probably going to come to you a little bit earlier as well, so that you guys have a few days to digest that episode, with the Ravens having a Thursday night game. Going to try to bring that episode to you maybe even Sunday night, but likely Monday morning. Because, wow, that first game is going to come quick with the opener to the NFL season. Ravens at Chiefs. I'm terrified. We're also going to do some playoff predictions and get into our week one best bets. Guys, this episode was a lot of fun. One of the best ones of the year. For Jace Evans and Tim Horsey, I am Antonio Barbera, and we will see you next week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.